Chodesh Tov Mevorach Hanukkah Sameach. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Tet Vav. We're holding one line up from the bottom on Yud Dalet Amud Beit. The next thing that we had in the Mishnah was a very strange thing. Ha'erachin ha'metaltalim, which doesn't really make much sense. So it talks about how many people we need to give an estimate for the value of the erechin that are metaltalin that you would have to pay. And we say we need 3 expert assessors. Now the question is, there ain't no such animal as erechin metaltalin. As anybody who's ever learned the dinim of erechin, a really simple psukim of erechin at the end of Vayikra, he knows perfectly well that the only dinim of erechin are said on humans, where it goes according to your age and according to your sex, how much you would have to pay, and has nothing to do with an evaluation. There are no evaluations. And if you're talking about metatolin, there's no such thing as giving the erech of a TV set. So what does it mean? My erech in a metatolin. Omer of Gidol Amarav, well, it means that somebody said he's going to be giving the erech of a TV set. So he said, erech klize alai. So you'll say, okay, so then that's a meaningless statement, and he's not chai of anything. Ah, but you see, that's not true. The Omer of Gidol Omerav, if somebody makes a meaningless statement like that, and he says, ha'omer erech klize alai, he is actually mechuyev to give the value, the market value, which is called domim, as opposed to erechin, he gives the market value of that kli. My time, huh? Adam yodea she'ein erech l'kli. Obviously, the man knows that there's no such thing as an erechin for a kli. And therefore, since this is going aliba l'shit of Rabbi Meir who holds, ein adam motzi dvarav levatala, people don't just say things that are meaningless. His intent was that he means he wants to give the value, not in the technical term value the way that Terry uses it, but the word value, which would be in the market value. And that is that he's giving essentially the domim of the kli. So this is called in adam otzit varav bevatava. So mishumachi notein damav, says the Gemara, but yes, it makes sense that there would be such a thing, but why in the world would we give it the name of erechin hametaltalin? They're not erechin of, if you say erechin hametaltalin, what you really mean to say is erechin shel metaltalin. Why do you say erechin that are metaltalin? There's no such thing as erechin that are metaltalin. You should have said if somebody gives the erech of metaltalin, then he pays this. So what would the meaning be of erechin metaltalin? How do you describe erechin themselves as being metaltalin? So I don't get it. Says the Gemara, you're right. But you have to read in the Mishnah as erechin shel metaltalin. It doesn't mean erechin ha-metaltalin. Rav Chista Amar Avimi, you know what it could be talking about that would make sense? B'matfis metaltalin le'erechim. Somebody had given a normal erech, his own erech or somebody else's erech, whatever, but he gave a human erech, which is erechim. And then he says, see this TV set that is set aside for Hegdesh to cover what I owe for my erechim. So if he wants to buy that TV set back from Hegdesh, then he needs 3 people to actually give it an appraisal. So that's what erechin hametaltalin means. That's for sure not correct. You should say metaltalin that were used for erechin. But it's certainly not erechin hametaltalin. That's crazy. That makes it even worse. Metaltalin shel erechin miboyle. Okay, so according to Rav Chista, you'll have to read the Mishnah, change it a bit, and it should read metaltalin shel erechin. So we don't have yet a really suitable explanation that fits the language of the Mishnah. Rabbi Abahu Amar, I would say like this. Maybe the Mishnah is talking about where a guy says, erki alai, I accept upon myself the chiyuv of my own erech where he says somebody else is Erech. That's not the point. But the point is he never paid. So now Hagdash is coming to his house, and they send a gizbar, and the Kohen arrives, and he wants to collect his TV set. So if the Kohen is coming to take Metaltelin from him, which would mean Erechin, if it's being paid up and collected from Hagdash by Metaltelin, that's the meaning of Erechin HaMetaltelin, as this, and HaKarkaot is with Teisha, with the Kohen. So that's what it's saying. If it's a TV set, it's Bishlosha. If it's Karka, so then we have 10 people or 9 people in one coin. Omar le Rav Acha mi difti le Ravina. Well, I understand that the language fits better, but the din doesn't fit. I mean, look, let's take the first two approaches. First two approaches was that the guy had actually given some metaltelin to Hagdash, right? Now he wants to buy it back. So I understand. You want to remove something from Hagdash, you're going to have to make certain that you're paying the correct value. Because otherwise, you're going to be stealing from Hagdash. You could be over on Me'ila. So, of course, it's very important for us to make sure that we have an appraisal that is professional and we need 3 people. That makes sense. But if the Kohen wants to go and he wants to collect the TV set in order to cover the debt that the person owes for his metaltelin, why does he need 3 people? I mean, what's so bad? What's the worst thing that's going to happen? Nobody's going to be male. I mean, they're going to collect a little too much, or they collect a little too little. I mean, the bottom line is that nobody did any kind of avera. Omarle said Ravina, well, I mean, listen. Bottom line is that you're going to be stealing. I mean, Malia Yuli Malia Fuki. Why do we say that we need 3 people in order to take it out of the Rishus HaHekdash? Afuki my time. Because if you don't have a professional appraisal, so you may end up making a mistake. The point of what that mistake will cause is not the issue. It happens to be that in the case of taking it out of HaHekdash, it might cause Me'ila. But you could still make the same mistake if you're collecting something for Hagdash. Dilma Tai, what if it's not really worth the amount that he was supposed to pay Hagdash? So you're going to be leaving him out in the cold that he was never Mekayim, his chiyuv to Hagdash? That's also not appropriate. And therefore, we don't want to make any kind of mistake. And in order not to make a mistake, what we're saying is we need 3 appraisals. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, one of them has to be a Kohen. Omele Rif Popola Abaye, I understand, according to Rabbi Yehuda, why one of them needs to be a Kohen. Because, I mean, when you read through the Parshas, all of these Parshas, like we spoke about before, we talk about, we have 3 mentions of a Kohen, Kashe Yarich HaKohen, Kartenu HaKohen, and so on and so forth. It says it 3 times in the set of actual, of what we've been talking about, of Erechin Mamish. Then it has another 3 times that it mentions this in terms of someone who was Makdish Abahima, which is a direct Hekdish. And then it says it 4 times in the Parsha of Karkoz, of Soda. So we have the Soda is somebody who's Makdish Estei Achuza, or he's Makdish Estei Mikna. We talked about that yesterday. So, okay, I understand. The Torah obviously must mean that there's some necessity for a Kohen if it insists on a Kohen. But according to the Rabbanan, why does it keep talking about a Kohen? It has no relevance whatsoever if you hold that you don't need any Kohanim. So why does it keep saying Kasha Yarish? I don't have Kohen. Kasha. Okay. It's a problem, but it's not really our issue to need to answer. There's a lot of discussion about what might the meaning be. HaKarkaot, then the next case in the Mishnah was in the case where we need to do an appraisal of Karka, of a Sada, that someone was Makdish, then you need 9 people plus 1 Kohen. So where does that come from? And also, I mean, it's a little bit strange, isn't it, that we have, I thought all along, this general klal we kept saying that ein betin shakul. So, what, you know, why don't we say the same thing? Why don't we need 11. It's very interesting that the reality is, as we're about to see, we're not talking about a typical Besdin. We're talking about a expert determination of value. And it doesn't say anywhere that an expert determination of value is determined by a majority. So who says that we need to have a Besdin that is able to be machria in terms of a majority? The whole din that Ein Besdin Shokol was because the Torah used the words of hataya. So in the Ein hataya tchala tova, hataya tchala ra'a, and vice versa. But there's no din bichlal of hataya. It could be that they have to fight it out until they come out with an accepted value. Maybe there's no din there for Ein Besdin Shokol. So that's not the problem. The problem is, how do we get 10 people? Omar Shmuel, well, it says the word Kohen 10 times in this sugya, like we spoke about yesterday. So every single losha of Yarichena HaKohen or anything like that is included. So if that means there's got to be 10 people. So you'll say, why mention Kohen each time? One of them is to tell me a Kohen. That's always the halacha. We take the first mention of a thing and we say, okay, that's what it's saying. Now, if you say again the same halacha, so then hanach avi miyut acha miyut vein miyut acha miyut ela l'rabot. Hashenken, if you say something more than once, so then we have a klal that is called a double negative. You keep insisting it can only be a Kohen. It can only be a Kohen. So each one of them is coming to say, but this one can be a Yisrael. In which case, we're left with only one, the first one, which is their legufe. And therefore, we have 10, yes, but only one requires a Kohen. Matki floravuna breder of nasa, does that really make sense? I mean, what we should say is, the first one is legufe. Then it comes along and says the second one. That comes to be marabad, that the second one can even be a Yisrael. Then we have a third one. That tells me that we need another Kohen. Then we have a fourth one that tells me that the fourth one could be a Yisrael. So basically, we should be left with 5 and 5. Ema chamisha kohanim, v'chamisha Yisraelim. And that way, we're using the psukim properly, I would think. Kasha, also a problem. And then the Mishnah says, an Adam has to be appraised by 10 people. How in the world could you have a situation where you have to appraise an Adam? An Adam doesn't become Kodesh. So why would we have, up until now, we've been talking about the idea of the actual Kedusha that is given on something that's given to Hekdesh. But you can't give an Adam to Hekdesh. So where would we have a din of appraisals? Somebody who says, I am going to give whatever my market value is, I'm going to give to Hekdesh, which has nothing in common with Erki Alai, but it's a way of making a netter. So that requires also a professional appraisal. What would this person be worth on a slave market? So Tanya, Omer Dome Alai, Shaminato Ke'eved Animkar Beshuk. If somebody says those words, I want to give my market value to Hekdesh, then he needs evaluation as if he were a regular slave that's being sold in the slave market. And why do we need 10? Because remember that Eved is Iskish Lekarkos. Since the Torah says, Yisnachaltem otam levnechem acharechem achuzat olam, so that is the lashon that we use for a soda, which means that the Torah is comparing a human to a soda. By Rabbi Yovi, this halacha that a human is compared to a soda, what would be in a case where somebody donates his hair to charity? Right, so they're going to use his hair to make a shetel for cancer victims, whatever. So he wants to give the value of that hair. Now, that hair is actually omed ligzos. It's already fully grown, and it's ready to be cut. It's in need of a haircut. Okay, so now, is that part of the person, or do we consider it to be mitalt? Bekama, how many people do we need to make out the value of hair? Now, in those days, hair had value also, not only as sheitlach, but hair had value as an actual useful material. They used to make sieves out of it. They would sift things through hair. They would make braids out of it for kids and things like that. So it had definitely value. So is it a metalotalin or is it considered to be an udder? That is, if it's about ready to be cut anyway, is it considered to be kigazu's dummy, in which case it requires three people, or do we see it as, look, bottom line is, it's still attached to a human being, and we know that the din of a human being requires 10 people, as we just said. So it would be like karka, and it's mechuber, tashma. Actually, it seems that we have a brayta that tells us exactly this. Let's say somebody owns a slave, and he gives that slave to Hegdash. If somebody uses that slave, he would not be chayev on Me'ila. Why are you not chayev on Me'ila? Because there's ein Me'ila bekarkaot. So apparently, we're learning that the Eved is considered to be like karkaot, and therefore, there's no Me'ila. Okay. What about his hair? Says Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, but if you use the sar of the Eved, you would be Moya. Okay, and over there we explain, what are they talking about? What was the machlokas? The machlokas was exactly this case. The kaimala, the bisaro, how made the gazes plige, the machlokas was that this hair is still attached to this Eved, but it is ready to be cut. And that means that there's a machlokas tanayim about exactly the question that Rav Avin raised. Do we view sar ha'omet v'kazeis, is it considered to be kigosu's dummy, and therefore in me'ila? Or, same thing would be true over here, and, therefore yesh me'ila? Same thing would be true over here, and therefore, if it's omet v'kazeis kigosu's, it would require only three people? Or do we consider it to be b'chuber, in which case there would be no me'ila? And in our terms, we would require 10 people to deal with it because it's still considered to be a human being. Now, there's another machlokas tanoim, which seems to also be the same as the machlokas tanoim between Reb Shimon ben Gamliel and the Tanakama about this din of Me'ila. Here, let me show you what I mean. In Masechet Shavuos. So over there we have also a klal that ein nishba'in ala karka'ot. So karka has these special dinim. We're talking about three special dinim of karka. One of them is that it requires 10 people in order to do an assessment in these cases. One of them was the din of me'ila. But there's another one. That is, we do not take a shvua on karka. Now we seem to have exactly the same question in Masechet Shavuos, as we have over here, and in the Sugya of Me'ila. Because take a look at the Mishnah in Shavuos, which reads, Ditznan, Rabbi Meir Omer, Yesh Dvarim She'en Kekarka, Ve'inan Kekarka. There are things that are like actual real estate in the sense that they are connected to the ground, but they don't have the din of ground. He was talking about in terms of making a Shavuos. However, the Rabbanim do not agree with him. What case is he referring to? Says the Mishnah Ketzad. So let's say a guy says to someone, I gave you into your hands 10 vines that were loaded down with grapes. And the guy says, you did give me, but you only gave me 5. Now, that sounds like a typical modeh b'miktzat. The din of a modeh b'miktzat is that he has to, midiyoraita, he has to take a shvua. Now, the question is, would you take a shvua even though these are connected to the ground? So Rabbi Meir says, yes, they look like ground. Sorry about that. Can't get my voice right. It's true that they look like they're karka, but they're not karka. Whereas the Chachomim say they are karka. Why? Because kolam mechubar lekarka reo kekarka. Anything that's attached to the ground has the same din as ground, and therefore you cannot take a shvua on it. And we explained over there, what was the machlokas in that Mishnah? Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Hanina, the case over there was similar to the case over here. The grapes are ready to be picked, similar to the case over here, that the hair is ready to be cut. And the machlokas sounds like the same machlokas over here. Mar Sava Rabbi Meir holds that we treat them as if they're already picked because they're fully ripe. And the Chachamim says, and therefore, if we treat them as they're picked, then they're just produce. And if they're produce, then you do take a shvuah on them. Whereas the Tanakhama holds, bottom line is they're attached to the ground, and therefore you cannot take a shvuah on them. Isn't that exactly the same machlokas that we have in our sugya and that we have in the sugya about the Me'ilah? So we have three similar machlokas about three special dinim of kark. Seems to make sense. Says the Gemara, no, not necessarily. Because it may well be that Rabbi Meir over here would agree in this case with the Tanakhama of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Because Rabbi Meir was talking about grapes. And he said grapes are considered to be detached. But you know why that's true? Maybe. Maybe it's only because if you leave fully ripened grapes on the vine, they immediately start to go down in quality and they end up losing by being connected to the vine. Mashain Kane, as long as you let hair grow, the more beautiful hair you get. Here, show off all of that hair, Ari. Take a look at that haircut. Oh, look at that. My gosh, let it grow, and it ends up getting better and better. So maybe Rabbi Meir would agree in that case. Just because it's ready for a haircut because the yeshiva wants it cut doesn't mean it's a good thing to cut that hair. And therefore, maybe Rabbi Meir would say in that case, it's actually considered to be mechuber. So sa'aro kol kama d'shafkel, as long as you leave that hair on that head, it gets better and better. So you cannot say that we have three similar machlokas necessarily. It's possible, but you certainly can't bring a raya that that's what Rabbi Meir would hold. Okay, then we got into the next piece of the Mishnah. So the next piece of the Mishnah talks about dinei nefashos, and then it talks about three cases where we have a dinei nefashos. The first was the opening case of human dinei nefashos of 23. Then it talks about three cases of dinei nefashos on animals. Over here, we're all talking about sexual use of an animal. So if the animal will actually rape a woman, so then the din is it's chayav skila. Or if a human sodomizes an animal, it's also a din in skila on that animal, and it requires a full bezdin of 23. And we went ahead and we brought two psukim to tell us that that's the halacha, since the Torah speaks both about an animal that has had sex with a woman, and it says also that the animal, the gam, so it compares the animal to the person, which teaches us that just as a person who is involved in a chi of misa requires a bezdin of eser v'shloisha, so too does an animal, gives the same din. And the v'gam ba'alav, Yuma tells us that the same din of the animal is also given in a case where the animal was the victim of a male that had raped the animal. Also, the din would be that we would require a bezdin of esrim v'shalash. Now, you'll notice, however, that it talks about the animal as being the active sodomizer and the animal as being the passive sodomizer, right? But it doesn't seem to matter what sex we're talking about. In other words, it doesn't matter whether this animal has actually raped a male or raped a female. It just says any animal which is roveya. So how do we know that? Kapasik vatani. The Mishnah takes for granted that loshna roveya zachar, the loshna roveya nekeva, that it makes no difference what the sex is of the human that this male animal has sodomized. So Bishlama Roveya Nikiva, I understand. It says Beferish Vaharakta Tahisha Viatabema. And it's from there that we learn that in the case that this male animal had actually sodomized the human woman, where you see the comparison of Aisha and the Bema, which means that you have the same halacha of 23. But where does it ever say anything about a male animal that is actually sodomizing a human male? We don't see that. So how does the Mishnah take for granted that that is exactly the same? Well, I mean, we have a completely different pasuk back in Mishpatim where we're talking about the idea of the Mechashefa, Lo Techaya, and we added over there Kol Shochev Im Beima, Mot Yumat. So Kol Shochev Im Beima, what would that mean? So, I mean, normally you would say, okay, that is referring to humans. It's telling a human that lies with an animal. Well, a human lying with an animal still doesn't tell us anything about the identity. Well, it doesn't seem to be talking about the human who was sodomized. It's talking about an active shochevim beimah, no? Well, but we don't need it for that, do we? The Pusik said the Farish that in the event that we just had in our Mishnah, in the event that the male human sodomized an animal, that's the Gambalav Yumat and so on. So fine, there we understand that we know that already. So if we know it already, then that must mean that we're adding something new. So in Eino Inyan Shochev, Tneu Inyan Litnishkav. So that this would be the only additional case because we have two psukim, one referring to a woman and one referring to Isha Sheyitain Shkafto Bivema, Viot Mot Yumat, Ve'et HaBema Ta'arogu. So we already know the two main things. Must be adding, therefore, that in the event that the Nishkav, the passive partner, was a male, it would be exactly the same. Therefore, the Torah, the Mishnah utilizes it as a Dover Pashat. Why did the Torah use the same language as if it's referring to the human who is the active partner? Because the only reason that the Torah uses this word in such an odd way, if it really meant passive partner, would be to tell me exactly the din that the Mishnah said. Namely, just like the active partner, the din is that the human, and the animal that he sodomized would be Be'esrim Vishlosha, Afnishkav, so too would be true if the passive partner was the human male and he was Nishkav, the same din would be true. Hu ubeim to bezri mishlosha. So that gives us all of the cases, the sexual cases. How about the murder case? The next case in the Mishnah is the Shor HaNiskal. So the Shor HaNiskal requires also a sri mishlosha. That's because of the hekesh of Hashor to the Baalim. Hashor Yisakel v'gam Baalav Yumat. What is that? Dichas ki mitata Baalim, kach mitata Shor. Omer le Abaye le Rava. I don't understand why you say that the Pasuk only means that. I mean, if you read the Pasuk, it says that the owner of the Shor is supposed to be killed. And you say, no, it doesn't really mean he's really not supposed to be killed. It just means that we're comparing the din of 23 of the owner to the din of the shor for 23. I mean, like, why doesn't it mean what it says? Why doesn't it say that the owner also is meant to be killed? So, mi mai dai v'gam ba'alav yumat b'kamitata ba'alin kach mitata shoru di'ata. What makes you say that the quote from the pasuk of v'gam ba'alav yumat is coming to quote mitata ba'alim kach mitata shor, unquote. And that's the whole point of it. How do you know it doesn't mean what it says? It means that you're supposed to kill the owner, says Rava. If that would be the case, then why would it say gam ba'alav yumat? If it really means that he's supposed to be killed, it should just say ashor yisakel v'gam ba'alav, period. What's this gam ba'alav yumat? So clearly it's not coming to tell me that he's literally killed. It must mean to say that it would be the same din as the mitat haba. Says Abaye, that's not true. There would be no way that we could have written in the pasuk v'gam ba'alav, because what would it mean? It would mean that the owner would be killed by Skila if his Shar had murdered a human, which is insane. I mean, I would have thought that that's what it meant. That's why it has to say it this way. But Rava says, how could you say such a thing? Biskila? Sakadaita, you're telling me if it would have said, Gambalav, it would have meant that if a human being goes and murders somebody and shoots him, so then he would be Chayev Sayev, which is a lower level of Misa, possibly the lowest. We'll see. That's a Machlokas. But if a guy owns a Shar, and the Shar murdered someone, then we're going to give the owner of the Shar Skila, which is the most Chomer. Does that make sense? That the Torah would be telling me to do more to the owner of the Shar than if he had murdered himself, someone? Nobody would think such a thing. So therefore, it could have said V'gam Ba'alav, and it didn't. So it's coming to teach me, therefore, that we're comparing the Mitat Ba'al, not that the Baal should be killed, but the same way that Baalav would be Yumat in Beit Din, that's how it is that we need to be Dan the Shar, meaning with 23. That's all that it means. But there's no possible way that I would have thought, Beskila Sakataitav, you're telling me Katal Iu Besayev and Mamono Beskila, if he murders, so then he's only Chayev a lesser level of Misa. But if his Shar, which is only Chayev because it's Mamono Mazik, then he would be Chayev Skila? Therefore, I say, it means what we say it means. Says Abaya, but still, Dilma hai the cause of Rachmana Yumat, Lakule Eluye. Maybe the point is that when it says Yumat, it's not coming to tell me what you say, namely that we should compare it to the way that we need to have a Bezdin. Maybe it still means literally, he should be killed. But it says Yumat to say, just get him killed, meaning in the easiest way you could kill him. So if that were the case, maybe the point is like this. If he had killed himself, another human, so then he would be Chayev Sayev, which means that we would use the sword on him. And the Torah is saying, no, don't do that. That is cruel. Kill him by strangulation. And that would still be telling us you mocked literally, but it says it that way to make it a lesser Misa. Now, I understand that that only is true if you hold what I just said, that the Sayef is more Chomer than Chenek. Okay, so Rava is 100% right. If you're going according to the Mandi Omar that says that Chenek is the most Chomer, so then, okay, it can't be telling me anything else because we're already giving him, in this case, the least Misa. If he himself would be killed, so then he himself had killed, he would be killed by the Sayef. So we can't be saying he should become more Chomer. So then Rav is right. I have nothing to say. But what about according to the Mani Omar who holds that the murderer, human murderer, is Chayev a more Chomer Misa, because he's Chayev Sayef. So according to Mandi Omer, who says that Chenek is the least of the Misais, why couldn't that be what the Torah is saying? Gamba love you mat, however you're able to be Meimisim, even with the least Misa, namely Chenek. Says Rava, it's not dependent on that Machlokes, my dear Abaye, at all. There's not even a Halamina. Lo Sakadaita. There's no way to read that pasuk as saying that we're supposed to actually kill a human being. Because the pasuk says, im kofer yushat alav. The whole parsha is that if the court gives the ransom, so then he pays the ransom, and then he would be okay. And if you really believe that what the Torah was saying is that he's chayev misa, how could the pasuk say, im kofer yushat alav? Doesn't it say, beferush? Never take any type of redeeming penalty for a person's life. So he can't ransom himself from Besdin. So the very fact that the Torah is giving you a concept of ransom, of kofer, means that there never was a chiyuv of Misa. And you'd have to be nuts to think that the Torah means kam ba'alav yumat, literally Misa. Says Habaya, just the opposite, excuse me. Adaraba. That would explain everything. Mishum hi gufa. That would be the very reason why I'm right. In other words, since the Torah said you're mechuyev to kill this guy, and normally the din is lo tikru kofer lenefesh rotzeach. That's why the Torah has to say, in this case, where it's only his shor that killed, not he that killed, I'm going to allow him to ransom. Fine, but miikra dinis chayiv misa, and if he wouldn't pay his ransom, we would kill him. So in other words, I'm telling you that if katal iyu, if he himself as a human murdered another human, then there's no way to take kofer. Lo tiskele b'mamona, don't accept any amount of money. Ella Biktolo, he has to be put to death. But if it was Ishar that killed, so he is Chayav Misa, but I'm giving you a kula, that Lifrok Nafshe B'mamona, he can ransom his life by paying money. So then that would mean that the Pusik is coming to tell me that the owner of the Shar is actually Chayav to be killed. And then there's another halacha, that he can pay the value of his life. But where do you get the idea that the whole meaning of the pasuk is merely to compare the din of Ezra v'Shloisha of the Besdin to Ezra v'Shloisha of the Besdin of the Shar that murdered? So I think that Rava's approach is simply not working. Elam Chizkiah, you know what? Said Chizkiah, we learned this also in the Brises that were quoted in Tanit of Chizkiah. It's not what Rava said. Abaya is right. The only reason that we darshan it the way Rava said, that it's, or the way the Mishnah said really, that it's to compare the 23, is because the Pasuk says, Mot yumata makeh rotseach. Tell me something. The Torah's been talking about the din of a murderer, right? Oh, be'eva hikau bi'ado v'yamot, mot yumata makeh. Do you really need to point out that someone who kills is a murderer? I mean, yes, I thought that was the definition of what a murderer is. A murderer is someone who kills. So why do you have to tell me rotzeachu? It seems absurd. Ah, but that's the point. Mot yumat, if he is the murderer, but if his animal is the murderer, don't make the mistake of thinking that he's supposed to be mot yumat because his shor killed. That's ridiculous. So that's exactly the point. Al ritzichato ata horgo, ve'i ata horgo, al ritzichat shoro. And that would be the reason that we're left with no choice but to say that when it says gam ba'alav yumat, it's only coming to compare the ba'alim to the din of Esther Vishleisha. You see, you come to Plet, and you finally get a chance to learn the Daf Yomi. Come back here. If you're already in Plet, you should be learning the Daf with us. Okay, Iboilo. Now, we want you to join us. I thought that's the reason that you came to Plet, was to be able to learn the Daf Yomi. Amazing. Okay, so now the next situation that we have is that there was, remember, another case where a shor would be chayev skila. There is. We have Rovea, we have Nirva, we have the shor on this scalp because it was a murderer. But you're forgetting when it came to Har Sinai. So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? It said nobody has the right to get close to this mountain, and it makes no difference whether it's a human or a shor, then he would have to be sako yisakel, whether it's a shor, oho, a shor. So in other words, we have what is another shor on Har Sinai that's going to be chayev to be sakul. How many judges did you need on Har Sinai to be judging that shor? Because there were already the chiyuvim of Besdin. That was from the time of Yitro. Mi gamar sha'a midorot olo. So do we learn out that special halacha that was only chal at that one moment in time that we should give it the same din as a shor on Niskal throughout the ages? Or is that not the case? Tashma, the Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel, it says be'ema im be'ema im ish. Doesn't matter if it's a shor or if it's a human, lo yichyeh, it shall not live. That means it's also comparing the ish to the shor again, because it says in Beimayim ish, just like the ish is be'esrim v'shleisha, afema v'esrim v'shlosha, even there, which means that this is something that is a fundamental relationship of the way in which we're done the animal. It's not a particular halacha in specifically the din of murder or the din of rape or any of these concepts. It has to do with the actual relationship between the human and between the animal. Now, the next thing we had was that we had a list of tame, generally dangerous animals. So we talked about Arivas, Evadov, and the Bartolus, and the Nochash. These are all dangerous animals. And yet, if people train these animals, it says that they would, if they ended up killing, it says that you would need a bezdin of Esrim Vesholesh. Rebbe Eliezer says, no, kol ha-kaidem la-haron is zocha. The first guy who kills them was Zeicha. No, that's not very clear. Is Rebbe Eliezer saying, if they killed, that we don't take them to court, but rather we view them as being dangerous animals and shoot them on sight? Is that the point? Or he says, it has nothing to do with whether they killed or not. These animals are dangerous, and we don't allow people to have pet lions. That's the point. And therefore, they should be shot on sight, whether they killed or not. That's the pshat. So Omer Reish Lakish, what Rebbe Eliezer meant to say was, is that in the event that these animals killed, then you don't take them to court. Because then it turns out that it was not correct to believe that they had been trained and that they were safe. They obviously are not safe. And therefore, they should be killed. But that means that if they hadn't violated that understanding by killing, you would have a right to actually have a trained lion and to keep that trained lion as your faithful pet. So, Alma Kasova, Yesh Lehem Tarbut, V'Yesh Lehem Baalim. So that would mean that in the event that they seemed to be properly tamed, it would be mutter for you to have that thing, and therefore you're not allowed to kill it by claiming as the neighbor, I don't want a lion next door to me, it's going to eat my kid one of these days. No, it's only killable if it actually had killed someone. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, that's not the case. What we're talking about over here is actually on site. The animal is dangerous. You had no right to keep an animal like that. And claiming that it's a tame animal is ridiculous. And therefore, you do not have the right of balut at all, because the concept of ownership is only where that ownership is included in the social contract. And over here, the social contract does not include animals that are meant to be wild. In which case,
Rabbi suggests that there's a relationship between tamer and tamer. It's the tamer makes him into a tam instead of a muay.
Fascinating. Interesting. Yeah. Question is, does anybody hold these a tam? Okay. Interesting. Anyway, so you see that Rabbi Yochanan says, Ein lem tarbut v'ein lem ba'alin, there is no social contract allowing living in your backyard as Kruger's Park. Tanan. So now the question is, it seems that Reish Lakish is wrong. You read the Mishnah. Rebbe Eliezer Omer, Kol HaKodem LaHargan Zacha. The first guy who kills them is in luck. He was the one who got something. Now, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you got something. What did you get? You got a beautiful lion hide for your rug. You killed the lion. You're in luck because you get to keep that beautiful lion rug. So at least you were Zocha la Oran, because Rabbi Yochanan said, this animal does not have an owner. But according to Reish Lakish, the animal does have an owner, a legal owner. And once it was made meat, then that would mean that the killing of that animal would be the equivalent of the court decision of putting him to death. And all that what was meant by Rebbe Eliezer was that We don't go through normal procedures, and the first person who shoots him is the one who's being Mekayim the Chiev to kill him in Beis Din. But then that would mean that it would have the same halach as a Shor HaNiskal. And if it's a Shor HaNiskal, the lion that killed someone would actually be Aser Ba'ana'ah. And that's the Ba'al HaShor Naki. You're not allowed to have any anah from it. So that would mean you're not allowed to keep the lion rug. So if you're not allowed to keep the lion rug, so what were you zochin? What was the big deal? Wow, you were the first one. You're really in luck. In luck with what? No. Why do you think it means he was zocha to a lion rug? Zocha means he got a schus in the shamayim. He did a mitzvah. That's all that it's saying. It doesn't mean to imply that he comes out with some material benefits. So my zocha zocha l'shamayim. And in fact, we actually have a braita that makes that clear. It says, Tanika Vasidere Shlakish, whether the shor was meimit, or whether it was one of these wild animals, maybe Ebeim or Achaya Sheimitu, they need Esrim Veshlosha, says the Tanakama. Rebbe Eliezer Omer, no. Only a shor Sheimit is Esrim Veshlosha. But other animals, are the Sheimitu, Kol HaKodem LaHargan, it says Sheimitu. If they killed someone, Kol HaKodem LaHargan, Zachabem LaShamayim, so it speaks out very clearly. Exactly what Rish Lakish was saying. You only get a schus, but you don't get any material benefits. Why? Because according to Rish Lakish, indeed the person who owned them legally. And therefore they now have a din of a Sharan Iskal. Now the end of the Mishnah is really weird because we listed all these different animals that are a machlokas between the Tanakama who holds that it's Esrim V'Shalash, and between, as we just had, Rabbi Eliezer Shita, that it's meant to be killed on site, either Alibid Rabbi Reish Lakish or Alibid Rabbi Yochanan. And then, in the end, we hear Rabbi Akiva saying, Be'ezrim Vishlosha. But that's what the Tanakhama said. The Tanakhama said, Be'ezrim Vishlosha. So was Rabbi Akiva reviewing what the Tanakhama said? Rabbi Akiva, I know Tanakhama. Ah, there's a big difference between them. The difference is that what Rabbi Akiva is saying is these, but only these, meaning these animals. But when it comes to the relationship to the nachash, which is not an example of another mammal, there he agrees, and he's relying on the Mishnah in Bava Kamma, which says, ha-nachash mu'at le'olam. So that's always considered to be immediately the most dangerous of these animals. So this has been Ogea Reb Barnea's point about whether there's a din of tam on these animals. And it turns out that if you have a pet dinosaur, so then everybody would be made that it's considered to be a mu'ad li'olam. But it's a machlokas whether you have a right still to have a pet dinosaur. Okay, but according to Rabbi Akiva, there's a difference. We have three shitas, really. So one is the sheet of the Tanakhama. Any type of organism that has been trained, you have a right to have, and therefore, if it kills, it has the same din as a Shor HaNiskal. Then we have Rabbi Eliezer, which breaks into two possibilities. Either according to Reish Lakish, if it killed, then you should simply dispatch it on the spot, and you have the shita of Rabbi Yochanan. Forget about if it killed. If your next door neighbor has a lion and you don't want it to eat your kid, shoot it. And he can't say, well, I have a trained lion that was worth $100,000. You shot it. According to Rabbi Yochanan, that's exactly the case. And then we have the fourth shita, which is the shita of Rabbi Akiva, that when it comes to trained mammals, yes, you have a din of Esrim V'Shlosha. But when it comes to trained reptiles, you do not have a right to keep it, and it's considered to be mu'at le'olam. I'm reminded of that hapless fellow who had his wonderful pet Komodo dragon for many years, very friendly, loving, loving Komodo dragon, who one day casually bit his leg off. What can you do?
I just said, read me an article about how the primate brain recognizes the presence of snakes. And I thought it would relate to this. And there's something inherent where it's intolerable, and I have to recognize the presence of a snake.
Yes, the dragons of Eden. Time for you to read Carl Sagan. Okay. Beautiful. The next case that we had in the Mishnah is what the din is of a shevet. Now, what exactly does that mean? A shevet requires shivim ve'echad. What did the shevet do that you're going to be judging them in a Sanhedrin gedolah of shivim ve'echad? Never explained it. I shevet the chotah b'mai. Did they, let's say, they went ahead and were mechalel Shabbos, so the whole shevet was mechalel Shabbos. I mean, is there a special din that is given to one person as opposed to what's given to an entire shevet? There's nowhere in the Torah that we see any distinction like that. The only place that the Torah did make a distinction between an individual or a group of individuals is b'nogei avodas kochavim. She'ema d'polig rachmana b'n yechidim l'merubim. Where do we find that the Torah made a difference between a yochid and a rabin that was only legabe avedes kechavim? So we know that we have a concept called an ira nidachat. So if an individual does avedes zorah, so the halacha is that he's chayef skila and that he's the same as any of the other muslim in Besdin. Masha'en kein, if an entire city was avedes zorah, they're not chayef skila, and in that case we give them only Saif, but they lose all of their money and the entire city is burnt down. It's okay. So there's totally different dinin between the Yochid and the Rabin. Okay. So I understand that is true, that in Iran Yidachas, actually a difference is that they need 71 as opposed to 23 for the Yechidim. But we don't find a difference like that, but no Chil Shabbos or anything else. So it can't be talking about Chil Shabbos. Or it can't be talking about that they all ate treif of food. It must be talking about a concept of an ira nidacha translated onto the level of a shevet. So if the entire shevet was nidach, so then the halacha is that you need a bezdin of shivim ve'echad. Is that true, though? I mean, are you telling me that the din of ira nidacha applies to an entire shevet? L'meima de'bedina de'rabim daininam le'? You're claiming that we give them the same dinim that we would give, and we would actually give them sayif instead of skila and so on. I never heard of such a thing. I mean, there is a machlokas about the size of an ira nidachat, but there's nobody who holds that an entire shevet can be made into an ira nidachat. Come on. It would be going not like Rabbi Yoshia and not like Rabbi Yonatan to Tanya. In the Braita, it says, at kama osim ira nidachat. How many people are in this city that we turn into an ira nidachas? Anywhere from 10 to 100. So says Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yonatan Omer, anywhere from 100 until the majority of the shevet. But we cannot have a case where the shevet as a whole would be called an ira nidachas. Even Rabbi Yonatan, which was the maximum, lo ka'amar ela rubo, Avokulolo, we'll see later where this is, what this is based on. But Tosis brings that the machlokas over here is how to understand the pasuk in Amos that specifically defines the city. Ir hayotzeit elef tashir me'ah. Hayotzeit me'ah tashir asara. And that's what the machlokas was based on. Fine. But the point over here is that the Mishnah seems to be taking for granted that there is a special din of Avodah Zarah on a shevet, and it seems befarish that every Tana that we know of says that there is no din of ira nidachas on the ruba shel shevet. So kulay loy, or ruba also not. So where does this come from? Omer Rav Masna, we're not talking about a shevet, you're 100% right. What we're talking about is the nasi of a shevet, and that nasi, he did some avera that was a chi of visa, and the honor of the shevet is mechayev us to treat the nasi of the shevet as if it's a dover gadol, as we'll see, and therefore it needs a sanhedri gedola. What's the makar? Milo omer of adabarava, kol hadavar hagadol yaviu elecha. So when we were setting up the bunti dinin in Yisro, so Moshe was told, anything which is a davar hagadol should be brought to you, meaning to the top, to the Beis Din HaGadol, or Moshe, as we saw before, is the equivalent of Gadol, the Beis Din HaGadol. So what does Hadover HaGadol mean? Anything that affects an Adam Gadol, Dvarav Shel Gadol. And therefore, the same way we would do a Melech, we would look at the Nasi of a Shevet, and he's considered to be a Gadol, and therefore he needs a Beis Din HaGadol. We'll see tomorrow that there are alternatives to how to understand this strange, opaque halacha of a shevet. Okay, Rabosai, I wish you all a wonderful Chanukah Sameach and Besoros Teves and Chodesh that is full of Yeshuas and Nechamos and Nisim and Yiflos, as if Yamim Ahem happening in our own times. Kol Tov, see you then. Bezrat Hashem Yisbarach.